During the 2.5 years of his papacy, the words and actions of Pope Francis have thrilled believers and non-believers alike. This hour, Iowa Catholics on change in the church. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. On the eve of the Pope's U.S. visit, we'll be joined by Sister Simone Campbell of the Progressive Catholic Lobbying Group Network. Also, Father Bud Grant and Keith Soko of St. Ambrose University in Davenport. We'll ask them how Pope Francis is transforming the face of the Catholic Church and why. What are your hopes or concerns about the future of Catholicism? Join our discussion. First, this news. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Next week, Pope Francis will make his first visit to the United States. Many events on his six-day itinerary, including an address to a joint session of the U.S. Congress in Washington. He'll also be in New York to address the United Nations. His visit begins next Tuesday, September 22nd, and ends Sunday, the 27th. During his 2.5 years of papacy, the words and actions of Pope Francis have thrilled believers and non-believers alike. In this hour, we want to discuss change in the Catholic Church on the eve of this papal visit. Joining us for the hour to do that, Father Bud Grant, a priest and professor of environmental ethics at St. Ambrose University in Davenport. Father Grant, welcome back to our program.
Thank you. It's very nice to be here.
Keith Soko is with us as well of St. Ambrose University, where he is a professor of moral theology. Keith Soko, welcome to you.
Thank you.
And Sister Simone Campbell, a Roman Catholic nun and executive director of NETWORK, a National Catholic Social Justice Lobby that is based in Washington, D.C. But Sister Campbell, I believe you're in Nashville today. Great to have you on the program.
Oh, glad to be with you.
And we want to reach out to our listeners this hour as we'll be discussing changes in the Catholic Church throughout the hour. Has Pope Francis changed your view of the Catholic Church? I see that nearly 13% of all Americans, according to a recent survey, are former Catholics. Perhaps you are a Catholic who is returning to the Church because of this new Pope. What are your hopes for his visit in the United States? What are your hopes or concerns about the future of Catholicism? 1-866-780-9100, River to River at iowapublicradio.org. Iowa Public Radio is also on Facebook for your question or your comment, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. Let me start off by asking you all about expectations for this very first visit by Pope Francis. Father Grant, what are you looking most forward to?
Oh, there's so many things. One, I hope that he returns to the theme of the environment that he started with his encyclical. It stirred a great deal of interest. I hope he maintains that. And I expect that he will also, in fact, it's clear from his itinerary that he will address matters of injustice and economic injustice specifically, and the way we treat migrants and immigrants to our country.
Mm-hmm. On the encyclical, since you mentioned that, this was released, I believe, in June, and an encyclical is a letter to promote some knowledge on a major issue from the Catholic Church.
That's right. It's sort of an authoritative teaching on the part of the Pope. Is reserved for very specific topics, and you're right, it's supposed to be educational and instructive. And this one is interesting because he addresses it, and I quote, to everyone on earth, unquote.
Right, right. In it, I see one of the quotes, what kind of world do we want to leave to those who come after us, to children who are growing up now? Can you see in this short time since June that it's had any measurable impact on U.S. policy in other countries?
Well, I don't know. I couldn't say for sure that it does. I can only speak to my own experience, and that's been extraordinary. I've done a number of talks and continue to do a number of talks around the state. And the groups that are coming out, I had a group of 200 people, and it's not just Catholics, Unitarians and ecumenical groups and social groups that have nothing to do with religion whatsoever. So, and they're all asking me to talk about this encyclical. So this seems to me that at least in the state of Iowa, people are terribly interested in what he has to say and are very excited about it.
Mm-hmm. Sister Simone Campbell, tell us about your expectations for this visit. What are you most looking forward to?
Well, I think I share Father's focus on three particular issues, but I think the deeper piece that I'm really looking forward to is how Pope Francis models compassion and models love of everyone, including his critics. And it's that living witness that I think is so powerful, along with his candor and humor. Mm-hmm. That combination of compassion, candor, and I suppose I could add another C, comedy. It's not really comedy, but his humor really shows him to be a living, breathing human being, but with a great deep spiritual sense and love that really models Jesus for us in the world. And it's that witness, as well as his verbal message, that I'm really looking forward to.
Can you recall, Sister Campbell, an example of what you mean by the candor or the humor that comes to mind for you?
Well, just I mean, one of his most famous statements was the on the press plane coming back from Brazil. He's holding this impromptu press conference just to talk about things, and some reporter asked him about gay and lesbians, and he just kind of, with a twinkle in his eye, says, "Who am I to judge?" And I mean, the refreshing, direct approach is unusual for someone in such a international leadership position, mm-hmm. but and especially for a pontiff who, most of our popes have been known for their seriousness, not for the joy of the gospel that Pope Francis proclaims.
Keith Soko, professor of moral theology at St. Ambrose in Davenport, what are you looking forward to?
I think I'm looking forward to, you know, as the others had said, the same things, but also just that emphasis on social justice and on Catholic social teaching, and to kind of bring that to the forefront, and the environment would be one thing included in that. But, you know, he's talked continually about a concern for the poor and the marginalized and economic systems that are unjust. And, you know, when we bring that up in our society in America, when we mention, you know, the common good and the community, there's a quick backlash to go, well, that's socialism. But no, it's a community and it's the common good, and we're all a part of that. And so I'm looking forward to him highlighting that those areas that we call Catholic social teaching. It's not how to get a date and be social, but it refers to social justice. And I'm looking forward to him highlighting that, because that's an area of Catholic teaching many Catholics are not familiar with. And they immediately, and he's gotten some critique here for some of those things, but it's right out of Catholic social teaching in the Old and New Testament. So I'm looking forward to him highlighting those things and looking at a better, more just economic system.
Join our conversation as we discuss change in the Catholic Church on the eve of Pope Francis's first visit to the United States, 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. You can tweet us at IPR Talk or find Iowa Public Radio on Facebook to leave your question or comment. Here's a comment on our Facebook page from Dominic. He is the kind of progressive thinker that has finally brought the church to the 1990s, and considering their disdain for change, that's a pretty big step. Perhaps I can go back to you, end quote. Perhaps I can go back to you, Keith Soko, there. When we talk about progressive, and that's the term that Dominic uses, or conservative, the church, you can see elements of both of those. Can you really describe the Catholic Church with such broad terms?
As one or the other?
Yes.
Or as both?
Yes.
You know, I think we could say, at least in the official church teachings, that it's both. And I think that's one reason it doesn't align well in this country with Democratic or Republican issues. It's kind of a mix. But I think we can say, and a lot of theologians have made this observation, when we talk about social justice, those teachings tend to be more progressive. We talk about human rights, and we talk about the environment, and we talk about immigration reform and health care for all citizens. So those Catholic teachings tend to be more progressive. But yet, when we look at Catholic teaching related, say, to sexuality, women, reproduction, theologians have noted sometimes there's a different method to those teachings, and some would say that those tend to be more traditional and conservative. So it'll be interesting to me, especially with the after this visit, the upcoming synod on the family that the Pope is having with the bishops and other advisors. That's the other side of the coin, are those issues of gender and sexuality. And so to me, it'll be interesting to see if this open, more pastoral approach, which he has had throughout, and listening and taking advice, advisors. We'll see if that continues when we get into those family issues. So
right.
I would say the church, you know, official teaching is a mix of both of those things, really.
Mm-hmm. We will talk about that synod coming up, I believe, in October, a little bit later, the synod on the family. Sister Simone Campbell, you were last on this program, I believe, back in May. We have to remind ourselves it was back in April that Pope Francis ended an investigation of U.S. nuns that started under his predecessor, Pope Benedict. The nuns had been accused, I think you are in these numbers, of trafficking in what was called radical feminist themes, straying from Catholic teaching by not focusing enough attention on some social issues like abortion. But Pope Francis personally summoned four members of this group under investigation to the Vatican and expressed their appreciation for their work. What has changed since that, really, that turning point that you felt more than most?
Well, I think one of the big turning points, in addition to the fact that we have a different pontiff, a different pope at this point, is that some of the dialogue that took place between the leaders of the Leadership Conference of Women Religious, the organization that was censured by the Vatican, and the bishops who were put in charge, in many ways opened their eyes and surprised them. I know it's been said that they were surprised that the sisters didn't either just say, "Oh, yes, Your Excellency," how we address a bishop, and also didn't say, "Not on your life, we're resisting no matter what," but rather engaged in a very deep, prayerful dialogue about the meaning of our life, and attempted to both explain our own lives, but then did the other piece that so often gets left out in those circumstances, which is to ask the bishops to talk about the struggles of their lives.
Mm.
And it was in that mutual sharing of hope and struggle that I think the rapprochement took place, and that the censure ended 2 years earlier than expected. So we know that Pope Francis calls all to dialogue. In Joy of the Gospel, which was the exhortation he issued in November of 2013, he said that there are four steps to peace. And I think that's what he's trying to do, is to bring peace within the church. And the first step towards peace is to have dialogue as opposed to protecting your turf, your space, insisting everybody do it my way. And so what we experienced was, when we entered into real dialogue, respectful, prayerful dialogue, the new could emerge and we could move beyond this moment of criticism and judgment.
Mm-hmm. Father Bud Grant, as a Catholic priest there in Davenport, as well as a professor of environmental ethics at St. Ambrose University, do you sense that change that Sister Simone Campbell just described there, that it's become more of a dialogue within the church hierarchy?
Oh, very, very much. Again, just going back to his encyclical, which sounds like I'm a little obsessed with that, and possibly I am. But
A worthy obsession.
Isn't it, though? His tone there, for example, is very much collegial. He brings in John Paul II and Benedict. He brings in 17 different bishops' conferences. He quotes Muslims and the Patriarch of he calls it Constantinople. So it's really interested in a dialogue more than he's interested in saying, "Look, I'm the Pope and this is the way it's going to be." And this harkens all the way back to when he was selected Pope. As it happens, I was in the piazza that night, and myself and the group that I was with will never forget him coming out on the balcony saying, "I'm going to bestow upon you my first apostolic blessing, but before I do that, I need to ask you to bless me." And the image of several thousand, tens of thousands of people extending their right hands over this man is unforgettable. And And that just has set the tone for his pontificate so far.
Why was that, Father Grant, why was that such a departure to have that turned around?
Yeah, isn't it, though? It's a departure because he is not so much in substance, because every pope, I happened to be in Living History Farms on October 4th, 1979, when Pope John Paul II came to Iowa. And I'll never forget when he prays the words of the consecration. There's always a prayer where the priest says to pray for the Holy Father for our in Rome. And I was anxious to hear what the Pope would say. And he said, "And pray for me, your most unworthy servant." So that's built into the very psyche of the papacy, that it's supposed to be a servant rather than hierarchical top-down. That being said, nobody quite manifests that with the ease and the charm of Pope Francis. Mm. So it is a departure in that sense, in this complete, I keep using the word tone. And tone matters. Some people are accusing him of not making any substantive changes, and I would disagree with that, but even if it's just a matter of tone, I coached soccer for 10 years here at St. Ambrose, and I know that when you're talking to your players, you can say the same thing to them. And one way you're going to get their cooperation, or at least their willingness to go along with you, even if they don't agree, and the other way you're going to get resistance. So tone is substance.
Keith Soko, on that question of tone or substance, where do you fall? What do you see happening here? Is it a packaging, a tone on doctrines that have not yet changed, or is there substance?
Well, yeah, I think it is more of an approach, and I would say more of a, you know, people would say a more pastoral approach, and I think that is certainly welcome. I mean, there seems to be an openness to having, you know, bishops deal with certain things on their own and not have everything go back to Rome, depending, even on the example of making the you know, the annulment process easier and cheaper or free, you know, that type of thing. My understanding is that those changes he made, you know, that's a procedural change, really, more of a canon law change. But I understand that the committee he had looking into that process of annulments and how could we improve that, that he incorporated almost all of their suggestions in those changes. And again, that issue of economic, making it free or not so costly, not taking so long, not having extra steps involved. I think overall, just that process, it certainly seems much more in line with the Vatican II, the Second Vatican Council, which met in 1962 to 65. A lot of changes happened at that time in the church, and he seems to be a little more in line with that tone, at least to many of us, in listening and in trying to be open and to include as his mm-hmm. audience, really, all people, not just Catholics. And there is kind of there's a different tone there as opposed to, you know, Catholic Church, love it or leave it, versus, you know, we need to be more open and we need to address everyone, including the poor. And just as going to the poor and going to prisoners and not being in the papal residence as he was, as other popes have been. So I think that all does set a tone, and that's very refreshing. I think it's very much in line with the Gospels.
Keith Soko with us of St. Ambrose University, Father Bud Grant, also of St. Ambrose in Davenport, along with Sister Simone Campbell. Join our conversation on the eve of Pope Francis's first visit to the United States. We're asking you, has Pope Francis, in his actions over the last 2+ years, changed your view of the Catholic Church? And what are your hopes for his U.S. visit? 1-866-780-9100. We're also on Facebook. In fact, Katie on Facebook says, "Pope Francis is an exciting pope because for the first time in a long time, I can hear my religion in the news and feel a sense of pride. Unfortunately, a good man in the highest seat can't protect me from the occasional 'we are unworthy of God's love' sermon at the local level," writes Katie on Facebook. Who's laughing there?
That's me, Keith Soko.
Well, why are you laughing? Explain it.
Well,
to those who are non-Catholic living, listening.
It's a worldwide church, you know, but certainly I'm sure many of us have had the experience where the ideals are not always expressed at, you know, a local parish homily or a local
right.
school or something. So I'm chuckling at that.
Right.
Can
Sister Campbell, yes, please.
Jump in on that. I I joke and I say, well, yeah, we've got great leadership. There's still the issue of middle management that we've got to work on. But gradually it's changing. I think that for a long time there was a lot of fear among our leadership, fear of being turned into the Vatican if you weren't marching to a certain drum, fear of reprisals, fear of being... I mean, I know a priest in the Arlington, Virginia diocese who was doing exactly what Pope Francis would support, but he was sent way out to the boonies because a bishop took exception to him. And so I think there were consequences, there were punishments, but now it seems much more in line with the approach of Jesus, where all are welcome at the table, and we admit that we are not perfect, but all are welcome. But that message hasn't made it to all corners of the church yet.
1-866-780-9100. Before we go to break, let's squeeze in a caller. Tom is calling from Harlan. Hi, Tom. What's your input for this conversation?
First of all, I want to know, do either of your guests know, is he coming to the White House and Congress as the head of state, or is he just an invited guest? Does anybody know the answer to that?
The president will be meeting with him, right?
Right. So he is coming as a head of state, and that's why he was invited to the White House, and he will receive the welcome that any other head of state gets.
The same
with Congress. He's speaking to Congress as head of state.
Well, you see, then that leads me to believe that one of the things I'm going to be watching for is John Boehner to turn about 15 different shades of purple and orange as he sits there and gets slapped around by his holiness over the Republican agenda. Because if he shares the head of state, he's probably going to come down on him pretty hard.
Tom, let's ask about that. We have just a minute or two left. Is the Pope likely to be as openly partisan as maybe Tom would indicate there?
Well, I think I had the honor of talking to the Vice President about this, and the Vice President is going to be sitting next to Speaker Boehner, and they're both very observant Catholics. And we were talking about the challenge that the way the Pope breathes and speaks is something that is not that the Republicans don't see as part of the role of government. And so I think it will be a challenge. But the other piece is I think it's going to be a challenge for Democrats as well, because Pope Francis talks about the importance of us being risk takers, of respecting all of life and respecting our planet and doing something about it, not just being partisan about it. So I have a hunch there's going to be enough call to conversion to go around for all of us.
And the Catholic Church would be in agreement with conservatives and the Republican social conservatives in the areas of same-sex marriage and also abortion, would they not, Sister Campbell?
That's true, though I think it's a less judgmental approach than what we had before. Recently, Pope Francis was talking, I was shocked to hear him talking about the pain that women experience who choose the abortion and how often it's a traumatic experience. And I practiced family law for 18 years and met several women who had chosen abortion who found it extremely traumatic but felt they had no other choice. I felt in Pope Francis that he, as a pastor, had a sense of the struggle and suffering. And so rather than just castigating them, scolding them, saying that they're judged forever, he said, you can be welcomed back. We embrace you.
Sister Campbell, we have to take a break. Keith Soko with us as well. Father Bud Grant is on the eve of the Pope's first visit, Pope Francis's first visit to the U.S. We're talking about changes within the Catholic Church under his papacy. We'll be back in just a moment. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. So glad to have you with us midstream on this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, talking about changes within the Catholic Church on the eve of Pope Francis's first visit to the United States, which begins next Tuesday. We're so happy to have with us Keith Soko and Father Bud Grant of St. Ambrose University in Davenport, also with us, Sister Simone Campbell, Roman Catholic nun, Executive Director of NETWORK, a National Catholic Social Justice Lobby based in Washington, D.C. You may know her from Nuns on the Bus, which we'll hopefully talk about a little bit later in the hour. If you'd like to join our conversation, very interested in how Pope Francis has changed your view of the Catholic Church. Perhaps you were a lapsed Catholic and this has changed your mind or has you thinking about changing your mind. I have to read a couple of comments from our Facebook page. I really like that Pope Francis seems to actually practice what he preaches when it comes to things like humility and caring for the poor. The papacy is often associated with the riches and splendors of the Vatican, but Francis is not that way. His focus on caring for the sick and poor and downtrodden is not only refreshing to me as a millennial Catholic, but also I think it harkens back to the most fundamental teachings of Christianity. Britt on Facebook says, I am a lapsed Catholic and definitely think he has challenged me to reconsider my faith and want to be part of Catholicism again. But I think he falls well short, maybe less because of his own beliefs and more due to incrementalism on addressing misogyny in the church, which was my main reason for abandoning my faith. Sister Campbell, let's go to that. Talk a little bit about the role of women in the Catholic Church. Pope Francis has promised to appoint women to decision-making roles in the Vatican. Do you see that happening?
Actually, I do. I was, and probably not fast as I would wish it would happen, but last year he appointed a Franciscan sister to head one of the 8 theology schools in Rome. That was historic because the rules have always said only a priest, an ordained priest, can do that. So he did that. He also appointed 3 sisters to come to the Synod in October, one of whom, Sister Maureen Kelleher, actually is a friend of mine and was one of the early staff and founders of our organization, Network. She's a lawyer. She has worked all her life with people at the margins, and to get appointed to come as one of the women at the Synod is a huge step forward. So, and there's other ways that he's made appointments that make a difference, but we still have a long way to go.
Let me ask you, Father Grant, about we had the lapsed Catholic there on Facebook talking about Catholics, and here's some statistics that I'm sure you're well aware of that will alarm you. A survey of American religious affiliation released this spring by the Pew Research Center found that Catholics made up just over 20% of the population. That's down from about 24% in 2007. It also found for every convert, 6 others have left the faith. There are about 3 million fewer adult Catholics than 8 years ago, and nearly 13% of all Americans are former Catholics, people raised in the church who no longer identify with it. Do you see this pope as a turning point, Father Grant?
My experience is that, yes, he is. When I do these talks, people will come to me or they will email me afterwards and saying that they just like the person who wrote in said that it's actually caused her to look again and maybe give it a second a second chance, if you will. Those statistics are certainly alarming, and I don't think it's up to the Pope alone to try to fix it. Certainly, he is a great boon, precisely because of all the things we've already been talking about. His tone of forgiveness and mercy and his modeling it in his own behavior, as somebody else commented, are all good, but it has to go right down to the parish level, and it can't just be the responsibility of theologians or priests or sisters. It has to arise from the faithful community. To be honest, I'm rather not at all surprised that not all Catholics are practicing everything that the church says we are supposed to practice, because it does leave room for the individual conscience and to maneuver as it should. So there is room for the church, and it's the job of everybody to make it more inviting and welcoming.
Keith Soko, tell us, where do you see the biggest gaps between beliefs and attitudes of U.S. Catholics and official Vatican doctrine?
Well, that would probably be almost anything related to women, gender, sexuality, and reproduction. I mean, that whole category are where the hot button issues are. And that's kind of what I see as maybe you know, the next step. Certainly, I think with the earlier, you know, comments, he's gotten people to look at the church again, the Catholic Church, and his tone and all of that is very refreshing and welcoming. It reminds me of an article of Hans Küng, Catholic theologian. I think when Francis pontificate first began, and he was talking about the poor and the marginalized, Francis was, and Küng said, you know, that's very good, of course. But he said, but what about the other marginalized groups, maybe not economically marginalized, but all of those Catholics that have been affected by issues like divorce and abortion and homosexuality and, you know, these gender issues and women's issues. And Kung's argument was, you know, that'll be maybe the next step to see are those poor or marginalized, are they going to be drawn back in or feel welcome back in? Or not, and that I would say is the next step. So you know, everything we've seen, I think, is very good and refreshing, and I'm excited. I get to see them. I wish I would, but maybe the next step is this the Synod on the Family that's coming up right afterwards. I think that would be the next step because I think those are issues where, you know, at some point, just the pastoral approach is very good and welcoming, but at some point, some of the doctrine is not welcoming still. And I think, you know, will he develop doctrine, change doctrine, or not? Are we going to draw the line when it comes to those hot button issues? And that I think is kind of the next step. And I think maybe many Catholics are waiting to see are those things. And the annulment process was an interesting, a positive thing. But I think many Catholics are maybe waiting to say, is it going to be the same old when it comes to some of these sexual issues, or is there going to be a more welcome tone to that, as I think there has been on some things, even his discussion of homosexuality, for example, when he says, right. Who am I to judge? I mean, that's very refreshing, but the official doctrine might not be very welcoming to many. And so that I think, is the next step that we've got to see.
What is the official doctrine when it comes to homosexuality currently?
Well, the official doctrine would be that the person is good and we should not discriminate against the person and demand justice and those kind of things, but it would still consider the activity wrong. Mm-hmm. And so the catechism still uses the language, which theologians, some disagree with, that it's intrinsically disordered, the activity. So therefore, a person is called to not engage in the activity itself, homosexual activity. And some Catholic theologians, well, since the 60s, really, 60s and 70s, have argued, you know, based on what we know about homosexual orientation and modern science, if that's the way God made you, then maybe you should be allowed to express that with a partner in a committed relationship like a marriage. And so that gets into the whole gay marriage issue too. So, right. So what I'm saying is, you know, if that's still your official doctrine, that's not very welcoming. And so we'll see if, will this go further or not? And I think, but those I think are some big, those hot button issues are some things that would keep many Catholics on the other side of the fence, maybe waiting to see what's going to happen.
Interestingly, a recent study by the Pew Research Center found that fewer than half of all Catholics in this country believe that homosexual behavior is a mm-hmm. sin, more or less evenly split. Also on whether the church should recognize marriages of lesbian mm-hmm. and gay couples.
Yeah.
Let's go to Father Grant on that. That sounds like a huge step. Do you see that as something that this Pope could possibly take as a step to be more welcoming to homosexual and lesbian couples?
The church has never moved particularly quickly. I don't know if that's been noticed. But when we do change, change in sort of small ways. The analogy I like to make for this question is if you're setting a destination for someplace very far away and then you change your trajectory by 1 degree, it doesn't look like very much in the near term. But by the time you get there, you're going to be far, far away from where you would originally intended or what the original trajectory was. So and Keith has already mentioned, so his sister mentioned some of the small things that he has done. I don't expect big changes, but I think these small changes from the perspective of a Catholic are significant anyway. And I do think that they will lead to a trajectory that is different than it otherwise would have been. Mm-hmm. But go ahead, sister.
And if I could add to that, when Pope Francis was the Cardinal Archbishop of Buenos Aires, and the Argentinians were considering the issue of gay marriage, he actually advocated with the bishops' conference that they promote civil unions, and that that would be a good way forward. He lost the vote. He didn't get his brother bishops to agree with him, and he ended up supporting the opposition to what was a successful move for gay marriage. So I think it evidences, though, his willingness to see the reality of people in loving relationships being supported. So I hold out some hope, but as was pointed out, the way I say it is that any organization that took 350 years to figure out Galileo might be right is not noted for rapid change.
Sister Simone, let me ask you about this. A few years back, you launched Nuns on a Bus. At that time, I remember when we spoke, you openly challenged, for instance, the Paul Ryan budget that you said was an assault on the impoverished. You have relaunched Nuns on a Bus for this political season?
Exactly. We weren't going to do it, but Pope Francis made us do it. In fact, I'm riding on a bus right now.
Pope Francis made you do it? How?
Well, the fact that he was coming to our country and the East Coast, and so many people in our nation need to hear his message. So our theme is what we think is Pope Francis's theme. He says we need an economy of inclusion, that the crisis we have is a crisis of exploitation of our earth and of our people. So we went on the road. We started in St. Louis last week, and we'll end up in Washington, D.C. on the 22nd, just before he gets there. But our effort is to bridge the divides, transform politics. And too often we're polarized in our secular politics. We got polarization in the church, but quite frankly, that it appears to me to pale in comparison to what's going on in Congress. So what we're trying to do is to say we need to bridge these divides. We need to come together as a nation and figure out how we resolve our difficult issues. And we just left Memphis in this amazing group, Thistle Farm, and the work of really volunteers who are helping former prostitutes and formerly incarcerated women find life and make meaningful contributions to our society. And the joy and the engagement of these women, and to see their entrepreneurial activities becoming business women, we've bought lotions and lip balms and a variety of other things, but the work that they're doing to bring dignity to struggling women was a huge witness to us that how divides can be bridged if we but have enough love and the will to do it. It was a great witness for our future.
Father Bud Grant, let me throw you this critical comment from Facebook. A listener, Edie, says, when it comes to Pope Francis, I have very cynically described his papacy as a rainbow tour. He consistently makes small concessions. His live and let live quips, getting rid of the chair, etc. Yet the structure of the Catholic Church remains intact. He may give a loving face to the church, but that doesn't make the church a more loving place. Mm. Father Grant, how do you react to such a comment?
Well, I'm very sorry for that comment, and I can appreciate and understand where that comes from. Not only do we have sort of an institutional system that is very old and very reticent to change, but we have also inflicted upon ourselves the gravest of all evils with the pedophilia scandals and the way that that had been treated. And those are things that rightfully, I think, cause people sadness, grief, and anger. I would suggest to her and to anyone else, go to your local community, and I'll bet you'll find it's welcoming. I'll bet you find a place there of joy and hope. And if you don't, keep looking and find one, because we all need that. And if the Holy Father's, it's not just a veneer. It's not just a persona that he is trying to project. It really is him, and it really is the church. It certainly is my experience of the church. And I would hope that she would find that.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the very dark shadow over the Catholic Church over the past few decades, the church's child sex abuse cases stretching back to the 1980s. What has this pope done to heal these wounds and begin to regain trust for many in the church?
Yeah, well, you know, I think Sister is probably more authoritative on speaking of the specifics of what he has done on the ground, but by calling people together and by having a no-tolerance rule and things like that, I think he has done a great deal in that respect, and he's met with victims, and he's, I think that was probably one of his mandates when he was made pope, that you got to get us out of this or get us beyond this. The other thing, though, is simply that he's offering this joy, this compassion, this offer of mercy and forgiveness. And ultimately, I think he's developing what I call a theology of relationship that doesn't dismiss doctrine or the church teachings, but it puts it in context. The church exists for the sake of relationship, and the rules exist that we might bind ourselves to one another and to God's earth and to God. And they should be in the service of that and not trump it. I think that's really, really important.
Sister Simone, your name was mentioned there.
It was, yes. Well, let me jump in. A few things that Pope Francis has done is to mandate that clergy and hierarchy, all who participate in the church, cooperate fully with district attorneys or police, report abuse, and to be vigilant in preventing it. Additionally, he has accepted or taken or forced the resignation of some bishops. One that your listeners may be most interested or most aware of is Bishop Finn out of Kansas City, and who was convicted of crimes of not appropriately addressing the issues of abuse. And so by accepting his resignation, and then quickly for Rome, we've talked about how slow they are, within 3 months, just this past week, appointed a successor. I mean, I think what he's doing is moving quickly on these issues. Additionally, I would say that his meeting with victims of abuse and his appointment of victims to the study commission that he appointed to create a protocol for dealing internationally, worldwide, with issues of abuse, because it's not just the United States. The horror of this is that it exists elsewhere. Africa, we have sisters in the Philippines. We know it goes on in the Philippines. He addressed it in the Philippines with the clergy there. So he's working hard to lead a change in our church on this horrible, painful issue. But it is going to take time. Trickle-down doesn't work for economics, and it's a very slow process for the level of change that we're talking about in the church.
Finishing up the hour here very quickly, a Facebook post that I'd like you to react to, Sister Simone, from Jane. Pope Francis's leadership is a miracle as he shines light on the authentic mission for Christians. Sister Simone, Jane writes, Sister Simone, you rock. I am deeply grateful that Pope Francis acknowledges the work of nuns now to allow women priests. Sister Simone, is that coming?
Oh, it is, but at glacial speed, I'm afraid. My hunch is we'll have married clergy before we have women priests. But here's the thing, is we're all called to different paths. And I, as a woman religious, I get to do these, to walk with people who are at the margins. And our clergy often get caught in parishes and worried about administration and all of that. So I know that I, as a woman religious, as a Catholic sister, have a freedom that is gift and grace for me. Others of my sisters I know feel called to ordination, but for me, the gift of vocation has been the biggest gift of my life, and I rejoice that we can lift up the issues of people in poverty, that we can work to bridge divides and transform politics. It's music to my soul.
Mm-hmm. Perhaps very quickly, we only have a minute left. We know the Pope is not visiting Iowa this time visiting the United States. But Father Grant, Keith Sokol, are there any special events planned to coincide with his visit to the U.S.?
Go ahead, Keith.
In Iowa?
Yes, that Catholics can look forward to and not travel to the East Coast?
That I am not aware of at the moment. I'm sure there are local things going on, but I'm not aware of anything that I wanted to promote right now.
I know that there are watch parties that are going to be happening to watch the Pope speak to Congress. And at our on our website, networklobby.org, some of our people are supposed to be posting that. Or on our Facebook page, they'll be posted. So look out for that for September 24th.
Okay.
And I can say they're all over the state, they're hosting talks about the Pope and about his encyclical to coincide with his visit.
Okay, very good. Thank you. It's been a wonderful hour to learn about changes in the Catholic Church. Father Bud Grant, a Catholic priest, a professor of environmental ethics at St. Ambrose University, also at St. Ambrose in Davenport, Keith Sokol, a professor of moral theology, and Sister Simone Campbell, Catholic nun and executive director of NETWRC, a National Catholic Social Justice Lobby. It's been a pleasure having all three of you on the program this hour. Thank you.
Thank you
very much.
Thanks for the invitation.
River to River is produced by Claire Roth, Emily Woodbury, and Lindsay Moon. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. It's a NewsBuzz edition of our program tomorrow. We'll hope you'll tune in. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.